Thank you for choosing the Flying Brian podcast series. This episode is one of many that is proudly brought to you by Unique Kennels, the official bulldog of mixed martial arts. They've been raising affordable and healthy bulldogs for the last 30 years. Look them up on Twitter at UniqueKennels71 and also on the old Instagram, instagram.com/UniqueKennels. If you haven't had your daily dose of cute, go there to get that in right now. Unique Kennels not only supports the Flying Brian podcast series, but they also support local fighters, promotions, and other forms of MMA media. Welcome back to another episode of Flying with Best Fight Picks. I am your host, Flying Brian, and with me, as always, the number one MMA analyst guy in the entire world, Daniel Levy with MMA Thought and also with Best Fight Picks. You can find him on the World Wide Web at bestfightpicks.com. What you're going to do is go to the upper right-hand corner of that webpage, type in your email address, and Daniel will send you his plays as soon as he makes them for each and every fight card. And the key word here is for free. You can also find this man on Twitter at MMA Thought and also at Best Fight Picks. Now, Daniel, the last fight card that we got to talk about was UFC on Fox 16 or UFC Chicago, which featured TJ, Killashaw, Dillashaw, and Henan Barao. Can you tell us what plays you made for that fight card and exactly how they turned out for you?
Yeah, Brian. So I made a mistake and I didn't listen to Flying Brian on the Jessica I versus Misha Tate fight. I went with the underdog Jessica I, and you know, the first 2 minutes, it was going according to plan, and then Misha Tate lands the big kibosh, the big right hand, puts her down, and was never the same ever again. So minus one unit, I should have listened to Flying Brian on that one. And then it got a little interesting. You know, Kenny Robertson lost a decision to Ben Saunders, and you know, I always talk about how controversial decisions are a part of the sport, so you can't complain about it. So I'm not going to complain about it. Minus one unit on Kenny Robertson. Then we also lost two units on Paul Felder, but Brian Caraway, he came through as an underdog for plus 1.2 units. And it's funny because I was expecting Brian Caraway to, you know, to take down Eddie Wineland and to grind him out. And then he goes toe to toe with him for three rounds and outstrikes him. So it wasn't a winning night. We lost minus 2.8 units on the night, but I'm getting back on the horse right now. UFC 190. Let's get it.
We're moving on to UFC 190. Some people might call another Pride Never Die card, but we're going to start the fight card off on the early prelims on UFC Fight Pass at 7 p.m. Eastern, 4 p.m. Pacific time, with a bantamweight fight between Hugo the Wolverine Viana and the ninja Guido Canetti. One of our friends on Twitter said that Guido Canetti is going to steal the show in this one. It will be extremely difficult to steal the show from this point on the fight card. It's the first fight of the night, but surely he means that the underdog is going to come through in this fight. Guido Canetti has never lost by KO or TKO, and Viana has only lost by that fashion. For that reason, I'm going to trust in our friend Go Paulo, and I have put Canetti on my UFC pick'em by KO in the third, and I was thinking about the counter move, but I'm not real sure yet. The odds have Guido Canetti at plus 375 right now, and Hugo Viana at minus 420. What do you got for us on this one, Daniel?
You know, I'm going to disagree with our buddy Go Paulo. And, you know, he's a very knowledgeable guy. But in this specific case, you know, Hugo Viana, he's one of these guys from Brazil that trains with Luis Doria. And if you're very familiar with a guy like Junior Cigano dos Santos, you know what kind of hands that guy has. Now, Hugo Viana also trains with Luis Doria. So he's got, you know, the same coach as Junior Cigano. He's working on his hands every single day with that guy. And obviously the rest of his game is pretty damn good too. It's just he's fought such tough opposition inside the octagon. You know, his only losses are against TJ Dillashaw, the current UFC champ, and Aljamain Sterling, a man that many people consider to be a future champ. And one little tidbit I want to point out is, do you know who the last man to drop TJ Dillashaw is?
I'm guessing it's the ATL boy.
It's Hugo Viana. Hugo Viana was the last man to drop TJ Dillashaw. Obviously, prior to that, it was, you know, John Dodson. But Hugo Viana's the last man to drop the champion. Now he's fighting Guido Canetti. And Canetti, in his last fight against Henry Briones, he didn't look the best at all. You know, he came out very strong, but he got hit with one uppercut. He went down. And as soon as Henry Briones took the bat of Guido Canetti, it didn't even take a second, you know, for him to get in that fully locked choke and tap him out. You know, it's not like Guido Canetti tried to fight the hands or, you know, go out and show his heart. He literally tapped out before the choke was even sunk in. So I question Guido Canetti's heart. But in this specific matchup, I had to favor Hugo Viana anyways. And then when I just saw the weigh-ins, Viana looks to be in much superior physical shape. So for that reason, I 100% am picking Hugo Viana here. And I'm looking into possibly parlaying him with a couple people. So you're just going to have to follow me on Best Fight Picks, and I will let you know exactly which plays I'm placing.
But certainly, if Canetti comes through with that victory, we'll give props to Go Paolo on the Twitter. You can follow him at Go Paolo MMA. He's one of our friends there. But we're going to move on to the next fight of the night. We've got a middleweight fight between Vitor Lex Luthor Miranda and Clint Headbusta Hester. Vitor Miranda is 11-4 in his professional career, and the same thing for Clint Hester. Right now, the odds have Hester as the favorite at minus 155 and the comeback on Vitor Miranda at plus 145. Clint Hester says that he went to the University of Bussin' Heads. That collegiate experience has led to 7 victories by KO or TKO. It's possible that Miranda went to the same exact college prior to joining Team Nogueira because he also has chalked up 7 wins by KO or TKO. Miranda has a black belt in Muay Thai and a brown belt in Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu. I didn't see it listed, but I'm assuming that it's under the Nogueira brothers. Hester has a purple belt in Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, and in the film that I watched, neither of these guys have any takedown defense at all. Miranda has fought at heavyweight. He was on The Ultimate Fighter as a heavyweight at one time, and he showed a little bit more ground skills than Hester in his previous fights, but Hester's basically your neighbor. He's an ATL boy, so you're probably picking him. But what do you got, Daniel?
You know, you would think that I'm picking Clint Hester because he's the ATL boy. But ironically enough, this is a very interesting matchup for him because, you know, normally he's fighting these grapplers. You know, obviously last time he fought Robert Whittaker and he got starched. But prior to that, you know, he fought Antonio Braga Neto, who's a Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu black belt, and his main focus is on the ground game. But now he's fighting a guy who's going to gladly, you know, willingly exchange with him. And I'm talking about Vitor Miranda. You know, Miranda, he is a former kickboxing world champion. And now he's going in there against Hester. And what Hester likes to do is stand and bang, but he's not technical at all. He basically relies on his athleticism and his explosiveness. So obviously he can knock anyone out, but if you got a very good jab, you got a good leg kick, you can slow this guy down and pick him apart. And that's exactly what Vitor Miranda is looking to do. Obviously he's going to try to use his kickboxing championship experience and potentially knock out Clint Hester. Now, obviously at the weigh-ins today, Clint Hester missed weight and he wasn't looking good at all. So for that reason, I'm leaning towards Vitor Miranda for the upset here. I haven't quite decided if I'm going to lay a unit on it yet, but is Dogger Pass 100%? And I'm most likely putting one unit on Vitor Miranda. You know, one thing that I like to do, even though Clint Hester is the ATL boy, yeah, he's a really cool guy, but this is about betting. This isn't about making friends, and I want to win. So I think Vitor Miranda, you know, he's going to get the upset here. So most likely putting one unit on him, like I said on the last fight with Viana. Just follow me on Best Fight Picks, and I'll let you know what I do.
And I like to sometimes tell the Flying Squad, the listeners of this podcast, to follow you and see what plays you make after the weigh-ins. But as you pointed out, we've already watched the weigh-ins. We're putting this podcast out a little late today, and Clint Hester missed weight by 0.7 pounds. That's very minimal. But yeah, I'll follow you on that one unit on Lex Luthor. That's a goofy nickname. And I'll put Vitor Miranda on my UFC pick'em by KO in the third. I'm always doing that third to give myself that 50-point buffer. But let's move on to the Fox Sports 1 prelim portion of this fight card that begins at 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific time for a bantamweight fight between Yuri Alcantara and Leandro Issa. You know, these guys both have nicknames. I'm not real good at pronouncing them, so I'm going to skip that. Maybe you can give us that. But Alcantara is 31-6 with one no contest in his career, and Leandro Issa is 13-4 right now. The odds have Alcantara at minus 250 and Leandro Issa at plus 230. Issa has a third-degree black belt in Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, and Alcantara, you know, he's just got a regular old black belt in Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, so no big deal there. A more major difference between these two guys is Alcantara has some Muay Thai accolades as well beyond the Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu. Issa has won almost all of his fights by submission, and Alcantara's wins are balanced between stoppages due to strikes and submissions. One key to me is that Alcantara, in his last fight, he got his ass whipped for 15 whole minutes by Frankie Sanz. Alcantara also has a ton of MMA miles. For that reason, I think that Issa might get a decision here, and you know, I'm just going to wait to make a play on it until I hear what you got to say, Daniel.
You know, Leandro Brodinho Issa versus Yuri Marajo Alcantara. This is such a good fight because Yuri Alcantara literally has some of the most devastating striking I've ever seen in the UFC bantamweight division. I mean, when this guy starts getting off on his strikes, he'll throw flying knees, he'll throw big punches, and he can knock anyone out in that weight class. The biggest issue with Yuri Alcantara is that when he gets taken down to the ground, you know, obviously sometimes he can, he can sweep, he can submit, but other times he'll just be very content to lay on his back and he won't try to get up and he'll just be cool with losing the fight. And it's really weird because the guy's athletic, he's explosive, he's got all the skills to win. I mean, he could be a champion if he really wanted to. It's just there's something off mentally with him, and I don't know what it is. You know, he is getting up there in age. He is about, 35, 36 years old, but it's just really weird. When he gets taken down, he doesn't get back up. Now, as far as his opponent, Leandro Brodinho Issa, is concerned, Issa is incredible on the ground. The guy's a, third-degree Brazilian jiu-jitsu black belt, like you mentioned, Brian, and he is a multiple-time Brazilian jiu-jitsu world champion. On the feet, he does train with Evolve MMA, and obviously, Rafael Dos Anjos, he was produced out of that gym. So they're producing some great guys, but the thing with Isai is that, he's not that good on the feet, and he's not that good at transitioning his strikes to his takedowns. But will that matter against Yuri Alcantara? That's the big question, because if Yuri shows up 100%, he's going to go in there and steamroll Leandro Issa. He's going to knock him out quick. But if he's not 100%, Leandro Issa can absolutely get this upset. He can definitely take down Yuri Alcantara, maybe even be the first man in the UFC to submit him. I highly doubt it, but you never know. So I think this is a dog or pass situation. It's very tough to call because, like I've mentioned a couple times already, Yuri Alcantara is such a question mark. When he shows up, he looks like a world champion. And when he doesn't show up, it's like, should this guy even be in the UFC? So I really don't know. It just depends who shows up on the night. So if they're both at 100%, you got to go with Yuri. But if Yuri isn't 100%, you got to go with Leandro. So for that reason, I have to pass on this fight.
So from the sounds of things, I'm going to put Yuri Alcantara on my UFC pick'em by decision, possibly KO or submission in the third round. Avoid the counter move, and we're going to avoid a play on this one. The next fight that I'm about to talk about is a welterweight fight between Warley Alves and Nordin Taleb. Alves is 9-0 in his professional career, and Nordin Taleb is 10-2. Currently, the odds have Taleb as the underdog at plus 210 and Warley Alves at minus 230. This is one of the fights that I changed my pick based on the weigh-ins. I had originally said that I was going to pick Alves because he's 10 years younger than Nordin Taleb, but Nordin Taleb trains with one of the best trainers or coaches in the entire world of mixed martial arts, Firas Zahabi at TriStar. One thing that I want to mention of why I was about to pick Alves is the dude starts extremely fast. And a guy that is 10 years older than his opponent only wins 40% of the time, which means that the guy that's younger by 10 years wins 60% of the time, according to Fightnomics. I'm going to give this stat a couple of times on this here podcast. For that reason, I was going to pick Alves, but at the weigh-ins, dude, Nordin Taleb looked phenomenal. So I'm going to wait to hear what you say about this fight or what you think you saw at the weigh-ins that would change my mind. What do you got, Daniel?
I have a very minority opinion on this fight. It's quite interesting. You might actually agree with me because you were kind of, hinting at some of the things I'm about to talk about, Brian. Now, with Warley Alves, like you mentioned, he's one of these fast starters. He has to finish you quick or he's going to gas out. In his last fight with Alan Juban, that's literally one of the worst decisions I've ever seen in my life. Now, I know some people are like, oh, that fight was really close, this and that. Look, when I watched it live, it was close. But when I rewatched it a couple days ago, it wasn't close at all. In the first round, when I was watching it live, it looked like Warley Alves dropped Juban and was teeing off on him. But then I rewatched it and he didn't drop Juban. Juban slipped. And then, Warley Alves is, throwing a bunch of strikes, but he's basically, he's hitting his shoulders, he's hitting his elbows, he's not landing cleanly at all. So it looked way worse than it really was. And then when Alan Juban got up to his feet, he starts getting off on these body kicks, he starts throwing his big punches. And in my opinion, I scored it 30-27 for Alan Juban. So I have no idea how Warley Alves won that fight. But like I mentioned, Warley Alves, he was on that season of Tough. He actually won Tough Brazil. And in the house, he would just go in there and steamroll everyone. He was that guy that no one wanted to face. I mean, you recall Diego Brandão and his season at Tough. It's the same case with Warley Alves. He'd go in there and everyone in the house is completely scared of him. He finishes everyone. And, you know, he won the season by submitting Marcio Liotto. But now, you know, obviously he lost to Juban. You know, it's counted as a win on his record, but that was not a win, man. He got his butt whooped in that fight. But now he's fighting Nordin Taleb, and it's a very interesting style clash because Warley Alves, he is that, you know, explosive guy that needs to come out and finish you in the first round. And Nordin Taleb, you know, he trains with Firas Zahabi, and he's more of a finesse kind of guy. He likes to pump that jab. He likes to run around the ring, use his footwork, try to beat you on the scorecards. So it's going to be interesting. If Nordin Taleb can weather that storm, I definitely think he's going to take home the decision. But Warley Alves can always come out there and finish you quick. So it's just a matter of, you know, which of the two outcomes is going to take place. At the current price, I'm leaning towards Nordin Taleb for the upset. But since I'm not very confident, I'm going to just have to pass on it. But man, it's just one of those things where it's like, are you going to lay minus 230 on Warley Alves to get that early finish? Or are you going to take the plus 210 on Nordin Taleb to weather the storm and get that upset? So I'm going to go with Nordin Taleb here by decision, but I'm going to pass on a bet, Brian.
Yeah, I'm thinking about putting Nordin Taleb on my UFC pick'em by decision as well. The dude just looked way better than Alves at the weigh-ins. And minus 230, unlike you said, a guy that's going to just try to finish early, might gas out early, just super not worth it. But let's move on to a light heavyweight fight between Rafael Feijão Cavalcante and Patrick Durkin Cummins. Feijão is 12-5 with one no contest, and Patrick Cummins is 7-2. Currently, the odds have Patrick Cummins at minus 160 and the comeback on Feijão Cavalcante at plus 150. Feijão has often been seen in the corner of my favorite fighter, Anderson the Spider Silva. He also trains at Team Nogueira. He was the one-time Strikeforce light heavyweight champion, but I think that his best days are simply behind him. Patrick Cummins, his best days could possibly be ahead of him. He's only had 9 fights. He is a very high-level wrestler, which might very well be Feijão's kryptonite. He has only fought 9 times, like I said, but 2 of those losses, or his only 2 losses, were by KO or TKO, so that's not good. That could be telling of his chin. Feijão, of course, is a striker, and Patrick Cummins is a grappler, so this is a classic matchup of striker versus grappler. But truly, I think that Rafael Cavalcante, his best days are behind him, as I said before. The dude's getting old. He looked a little bit more fit at weigh-ins today than he did in his fight against Ryan Darth Bader, but I still think that Patrick Durkin's Cummins is going to bump and grind Rafael Cavalcante for 15 minutes in a fight that is going to be far from fight of the night. What do you think, Daniel?
You know, Rafael Feijão, when he shows up, this guy's one of the scariest guys at 205 pounds. And when he doesn't show up, it's kind of like Yuri Alcantara, where you can take him down and he's just going to be content to lay on his back and give you the decision. And Patrick Cummins, you know, he is I believe he's an Olympic alternate wrestler. And so he's got the highest, you know, wrestling credentials you can have, you know, aside from, you know, winning that gold medal or anything like that. But I'm saying he's better than a Division I wrestler. He's a very high level wrestler. But this isn't a wrestling match, and Patrick Cummins' striking is absolutely atrocious. It's terrible. And Rafael Feijão, when he shows up, he's got incredible striking. And Rafael Feijão has a lot of experience against wrestlers. Let me tell you some of the guys he's knocked out. Yoel Romero, Olympic silver medalist, knocks him out. King Mo, you know, he defeated him by knockout to get that Strikeforce title. And then obviously he fought Ryan Bader, and that was one of those times where, you know, Rafael Feijão, he didn't show up. He's looking kind of soft at the weigh-ins. And, you know, whenever he comes in there and doesn't care, he always loses. But when he does care, he's a very explosive striker. He can knock you out with spinning back fists, with flying knees. So when I was, you know, watching the film on this fight, I was like, all right, I'm going to have to wait for the weigh-ins because, you know, if Feijão comes in a little fat, Patrick Cummins is for sure going to grind him out. But then I watch the weigh-ins now, and Feijão looked great. He looked like the classic Feijão. He looked like the guy that knocked out Yoel Romero. He looked like the guy that knocked out King Mo. So, dude, for that reason, I'm actually leaning Rafael Feijão here. I think that, you know, Patrick Cummins might get a couple early takedowns, but assuming that Feijão's in the shape that I think he's in, he's going to be able to get back up. And once they're on the feet, they're worlds apart. So I have Rafael Feijão getting the knockout here. And once again, just follow me on Best Fight Picks, and I'll let you know if I go ahead with the one-unit shot on Feijão at plus 150.
And we all saw what happened to Patrick Cummins when he was trying to grind out OSP for a while, and then OSP got up. Lights out pretty quick there. I'm a little bit torn with my heart on this fight. I like Patrick Cummins because of his story about being a barista and stuff like that. And I like Rafael Feijão Cavalcante because he trains with the greatest fighter in the world of all time, Anderson the Spider Silva. So I'll just follow you on whatever play you make on that. But let's move on to the next fight. It's a welterweight fight. And this one might steal the show of the prelims, at least. We've got Damian Maia, who is 20-6 in his professional career, versus Neil Magny. I like to call Neil Magny Gumby because he's so long and he's really fluid loose on his feet. He is 15-4 in his professional career. Magny right now is the underdog at plus 165, and Damian Maia is at minus 175. As I said in the last a couple of fights ago, Neil Magny is 10 years younger than Damian Maia, and a person who has a 10-year age advantage over his opponent wins 60% of the time. That means that he's 10 years younger. We're favoring youth in this sport, of course. And also, a person with a 6-inch reach advantage wins 60% of the time. And Neil Magny has an 8-inch reach advantage over Damian Maia. Everyone knows Damian Maia's game is Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu. He wants to get you to the floor. And once he gets you there, you know, he's probably going to tap you out. But he did not do that in his last fight. I personally think that Neil Magny is a must-have on your counter move team because he's only worth $4,800 on there. And I'm going to put Neil Magny on my UFC pick'em by KO or TKO in the third. I think that even if Damian Maia gets Neil Magny down, Neil Magny's going to get back up, tee off on his face, maybe not get the finish, but probably a decision. I think that Neil Magny is my most confident underdog of this fight card. What do you think, Daniel?
You know, Brian, one of the things that we like to talk about a lot on this podcast is these guys that really made big career turnarounds. You know, Rafael Dos Anjos, Robbie Lawler, Matt Brown, all these guys come to mind because, you know, at one point they were just, you know, average run-of-the-mill kind of guys. You know, obviously Robbie Lawler's always knocked guys out, but what I'm saying is that, you know, there was that little span in Strikeforce where he was getting tapped out every other fight. But now, you know, the guy's a champion. Rafael Dos Anjos is a champion. Matt Brown's a top five contender. Now I want to talk about Neil Magny. You know, this is a guy who, you know, on The Ultimate Fighter, he got knocked out by Mike Ricci with a brutal elbow. You know, he comes into the UFC, loses to Seth Baczynski, loses to Serginho Moraes, and you're wondering, you know, if this guy loses one more fight, he's going to get cut. Now he put together a 7-fight win streak, and he's getting better every single fight. He trains out of the Elevation team in Colorado. So, you know, he's training in that, you know, in the high altitude every single day, you know, with guys like Brandon Thatch, guys like Tony Sims. Now Dwayne Bang Ludwig is over there. And if you saw TJ Dillashaw the other day, you know what kind of a coach and a mastermind Dwayne Bang Ludwig is. So I can't specifically confirm if Neil Magny's been working with him, but the fact that Dwayne Bang Ludwig is at Team Elevation right now, I would just have to, you know, do 1 + 1 = 2 on that one and assume that he is. So with that being said, man, you know, Neil Magny is getting better every single fight. He's got the longest reach in the welterweight division. He uses his jab very, very effectively. And, you know, you can take him down, but what he's been doing lately, you know, in that fight with Serginho Moraes, you know, obviously he got submitted by a, you know, 3-time jiu-jitsu world champion. And Damian Maia's got, you know, those kind of grappling credentials. But we're going to talk about that in a sec. But in fights after that, Magny would get taken down. He'd get back up. He's showing better takedown defense. And now he's even taking guys down. You know, he's getting that double body lock, slamming guys, getting on top of them and pounding them out. So he's really, you know, rounding out his game. And he's turning out to be the complete package because it used to be a, you know, a joke in the MMA community. Whenever Neil Magny fights, always bet the not Neil Magny inside the distance prop. And then Neil Magny started knocking guys out. He knocked out Hyung-Yu Lim. I mean, Tarek Saffiedine, who's a kickboxing world champion, went 5 rounds with Hyung-Yu Lim and couldn't knock him out. And Neil Magny did, you know, rather quickly. So now we got to talk about Damian Maia because, I mean, Damian Maia, at one point, he was considered the best Brazilian jiu-jitsu artist inside the UFC. You know, he had that little streak where he went on, you know, he submitted about 4 or 5 guys in a row, including Chael Sonnen. And lately, you know, besides the Rick Story fight, he hasn't really been submitting anyone lately. What he's been doing is he's actually been wrestling. You know, he's got a very good double leg. He's got a good single leg. He'll even pull guard and sweep you. It's really interesting how he's transitioned wrestling into his Brazilian jiu-jitsu game. And he's been so effective. You know, in that last fight with Ryan LaFleur, was able to take him down for 4 out of those 5 rounds and grind him out. The issue with LaFleur is that he's not seasoned at all like Neil Magny, and he's got no stand-up at all like Neil Magny. The only thing that Ryan LaFleur had was grappling, and Maya's a better grappler. So that canceled itself out, and Maya was the better guy. With Magny, I'm not convinced that's going to be the case. I think that if Neil Magny is a smart guy, which I know he is, he probably studied the Rory McDonald fight to a T. And in that fight, Damian Maya got exactly where he wanted to be early in the first round. He had that full mount, but what Rory did was so effective and beautiful. He'd use those butterfly hooks and, you know, eventually elevate Damian Maya, get back up to his feet, and then light him up standing. And that's exactly what Neil Magny has to do here. So, you know, there's always the chance that Damian Maya can grind it out, potentially get the submission, but I'm leaning more towards if Maya wins, it'll be via three-round grind. But what I think is going to happen is that first round, Maya's going to take it. That second round, Neil Magny's going to take it, and then it's going to come down to that third round. And we all know Damian Maya looks like the walking mummy when he's tired. I mean, you recall that third round with Rory McDonald. You recall that fifth round with Ryan LaFleur. So his cardio is a big question here. And he's going against a guy that not only has the longest reach in that weight class, a guy that trains at an elevation that's going to have zero cardio problems. So I agree with you, Brian. I'm going with the underdog here, and I'm most likely putting a unit on that too.
Another thing that you didn't mention is that Damian Maya kind of looked bad at the weigh-ins. I don't know what he usually looks at, what he usually looks like at weigh-ins, but Damian Maya did not look good at the weigh-ins today. This is the first play that I'm ever going to put out on this podcast. This is a Flying Brian first. I have put two units on a parlay with Neil Magny and one person later on this card.
Interesting, my man. Yeah, you know, I normally don't recommend parlaying underdogs, but I always recommend winning. So if it cashes, I can't say anything bad. And I really hope you cash this play, man. I can't wait to hear who the second leg of the parlay is going to be.
I really appreciate that, man. I hope it comes through. You know, I'm no Daniel Levy, but I feel confident in this play. And I'll reveal the second person later on this card. But right now, let's move on to an ultra rare 7-fight main card portion of this fight card. The first of which that's going to start at 10 p.m. Eastern, 7 p.m. Pacific time, is a women's strawweight fight between Claudia Gadelha and former World Series of Fighting strawweight champion Jessica Aguilar. Claudia Gadelha is 12-1, and that one loss was to our current champion, Joanna Jędrzejczyk, and Jessica Aguilar is 19-4 in her professional career. The odds are not what I thought they were going to be. Claudia Gadelha is minus 420, and the comeback on Jessica Aguilar at plus 375. Honestly, I am just impressed with Claudia Gadelha. I haven't seen too much from Jessica Aguilar, but Gadelha went to a decision with our champion, JJ, like I said before, and many might say that Claudia Gadelha won that fight. And for that reason alone, I have put Claudia Gadelha on my UFC pick'em by decision because, let's be real, I don't think that the women finish that often. This fight is really intriguing, though. I'm excited to watch this fight, but I definitely put Claudia Gadelha on my UFC pick'em by decision, and I'm avoiding the counter move on this one because I do not see a finish happening on either side. What do you got, Daniel?
You know, Jessica Aguilar was considered by many people to be the best strawweight outside of the UFC. And now she's in the UFC and she's fighting what many people consider to be the best strawweight in the UFC. Now, I know, you know, Claudia Gadelha, she lost to Joanna Jędrzejczyk, but a lot of people actually thought she won that fight. Not me. Let me tell you why. So Claudia Gadelha, she took down Joanna Jędrzejczyk seven times. Seven times. Normally when you take down someone seven times, I don't care who you are, you're going to win that fight. But she also got dropped twice. So, you know, let's talk about that for a second. If you take someone down seven times and, you know, you kind of just hold them down, you know, you stall out the fight, that's not really effective. If you take someone down seven times and you start landing big ground and pound, you start landing some elbows, you start cutting them up, you start breaking their will, that is effective. And Claudia Gadelha did none of that. She just, you know, basically took her down and did nothing with it. And she got dropped twice by Joanna Jędrzejczyk. At the end of that fight, Claudia Gadelha was so rocked that when the bell rang, she still was swinging at Joanna Jędrzejczyk. So, I mean, it was a pretty clear decision for Jędrzejczyk, in my opinion. I know a lot of people are like, what are you talking about, man? Look, man, I favor two knockdowns over seven takedowns with zero damage all day. Now, let's talk about this matchup. So, Aguilar, you know, she is the best strawweight outside of the UFC. She's beat a lot of, you know, UFC bets. She even beat former UFC champ Carla Esparza. It's weird calling Esparza a champ, but it is what it is, right? She held the belt. So, you know, Aguilar beat her. I just think, you know, Claudia Gadelha is better. You know, they both like to grapple. They both got strong top control, but I slightly favor Gadelha here. Now, the thing is, in terms of betting, you know, minus 420 for Gadelha and plus 375 for Aguilar, obviously it's dog or pass from a betting perspective, but from a picks perspective, I got Claudia Gadelha here, and I think she's going to get her long-awaited rematch with Joanna Jędrzejczyk.
I really hope that happens. I cannot wait for the rematch with Claudia Gadelha and Joanna Jędrzejczyk. Joanna Jędrzejczyk has quickly become one of my favorite fighters in all of MMA, especially in the UFC. But let's move on to one of two heavyweight fights on this fight card. We've got Antonio Bigfoot Silva versus Soa the Hulk Pelele. Antonio Bigfoot Silva is 18-7 with one no contest, and Soa the Hulk is 22-4. Currently, the odds have Soa the Hulk at minus 200 and Antonio Bigfoot Silva at plus 185. I'm kind of sad to say this, but maybe not. Antonio Bigfoot Silva is one of the only men in all of combat sports that probably needs therapeutic use of testosterone, you know, TRT, because he has a form of gigantism called acromegaly. This dude's hands, feet, and face are never going to stop growing, and so his body's energy is being sent to those places to build those bones because of his acromegaly. So his muscles can't catch up to that. Now, he's no longer on TRT because they banned it. And So the Hulk is the same guy he's always been. For that reason, I'm picking So the Hulk to knock out Antonio Bigfoot Silva. I really don't think that Antonio Bigfoot Silva is going to be fighting for very much longer because this type of thing is going to be happening to him. I know that you said for a while you were going to wait until the weigh-ins, which just happened today, to see if Antonio Bigfoot Silva was on the juice again. Well, he obviously was not on the juice at the weigh-in, so I'm sticking with that pick. I've got So the Hulk Pelele via KO or TKO in the first round on my UFC pick'em, and I would consider putting him on my countermove team. What do you think, Daniel?
Yeah, you know, obviously I wanted to make sure that, you know, this fight is in Brazil. I wanted to make sure that Bigfoot Silva wasn't going to show up, you know, looking ripped out of his mind or something like that. And he didn't, you know, he looked like the same soft guy that fought Frank Mir and Arlovsky. Now, back in Bigfoot's day, he was one of the scariest heavyweights around, you know. You get that full mount, you can't get up. He's got those lunchbox fists. You know, he beat Fedor, he knocked out Overeem, knocked out Travis Brown. I mean, the guys beat the who's who. It's just lately, you know, since that TRT ban. And let me mention that Mark Hunt fight where he tested positive on a ridiculous, you know, ratio, you know, for his testosterone, you know. And ever since then, you know, the ban's been in place and he's just looked awful. You know, one little punch and he'll go down. You know, against Frank Mir, he got knocked out with a 1-3. You know, a 1-3 is a setup for the two. He got knocked out by the setup punch. I mean, it's kind of sad, man. It doesn't take much to knock him out. The interesting thing about this matchup is that Soa Pelele, he's not known for knocking guys out standing. He's known for taking guys down, full mounting them, and knocking them out there. He's actually an Australian championship wrestler, which is kind of funny because, you know, Australia is not known for the wrestling, but that's exactly what Soa Pelele does in most of his fights. You know, obviously he lost to Jared Rochal, who's an American wrestler. We all know Americans are better wrestlers than Australians. Now, I love Australia. I'm not talking shit. I'm just laying out the facts. There's no D1 in Australia. There is D1 in the USA. But Antonio Silva has zero wrestling credentials. What he does have is a Brazilian jiu-jitsu black belt, but I've never seen him use it even one time in a fight. So, you know, unless Bigfoot suddenly looks like the old Bigfoot, which in my opinion, there's, you know, 0.001 chance of that happening, I got Soa Pelele knocking him out, and I'm thinking about putting Pelele in a parlay here. I just got to be very careful about how I make these parlays because, you know, obviously we like Hugo Viana, we like Soa Pelele, and we like one other favorite. I'm not talking about Rousey, but we like one other favorite later on the card, and to you know, there's always a chance one of them's going to lose, and, you know, if one person loses on the parlay is done, so I'm just putting the teams together, you know, carefully, and I'm going to make the right call. So just follow me on Best Fight Picks, and we most likely will have Soa Pelele in some kind of a play.
One thing that I want to say that's completely unrelated to mixed martial arts about Australians is they have the second most dangerous snake in the world there in abundance. So just to live there, I feel like you have to be super brave. But let's move on to another heavyweight fight between Stefan the Skyscraper Struve and Minotauro Big Nog Nogueira. Skyscraper Struve is 29-7 in his professional career, and Big Nog is 34-9 with one draw and one no contest. Right now, the odds have Big Nog as the underdog at plus 145 and Skyscraper Struve at minus 155. I tweeted the other day, UFC 190, fade everyone. And this is the beginning of that. Skyscraper Struve has had heart problems. And he said in an article from MMA Fighting, I think, the other day, that he's been fighting his entire career at 60% because of his heart defect. Yeah, great, great to tell us that. Also, he has debilitating anxiety because of that heart problem. Minotauro Nogueira is old. He's a Pride veteran. He hasn't looked good in most of his UFC career, so both of these guys are fade worthy. I highly doubt you're making a play on this fight, but you know, I don't really know yet. Skyscraper Struve also said the other day that he uses his reach better than any heavyweight. I think that is a complete crock of shit, so that's a fade that statement right there. I'm going to put Skyscraper on my UFC pick'em by decision just because he's the favorite. I don't really know. What do you got for us, Daniel?
Sorry, that actually made me laugh that he said he uses his reach the best in that weight class. No, he doesn't. He's got the same reach as John Jones, which is like such a, you know, such a gift, you know, to have that. And he doesn't use it. He's not out there throwing jabs. He's not out there throwing push kicks. But what he does have is a lot of heart. The kid loves to brawl. And, you know, a lot of the time he can break guys, you know, because the first round he'll get his ass kicked. He'll be all bloody. And then he'll still be there in the second round. So what you got to do if you want to beat Stefan Struve is you have to knock him out. You're not going to win a decision against this guy. And most likely you're not going to submit him. You have to knock Stefan Struve out. Luckily for Nogueira's sake, he can knock guys out with no problem. Obviously, you saw the Brendan Schaub fight. You saw the Randy Couture fight where he dropped him like three times. And, you know, it's funny because obviously Nogueira is the older guy who's at the end of his career. But Stefan Struve's got these heart problems. And if, you know, I'm not a doctor, but there's one thing I do know about the heart. And carrying extra weight makes the heart work harder. Not only is Stefan Struve carrying some extra weight, I believe this is the first time that he actually cut weight to make 265. The guy used to fight. Look, when he first started in the UFC, he was weighing in like 229. Then he puts on a little size. He's 245. Now he's cutting weight to make 265, and the guy already has heart problems. This cannot go well for him. Obviously, if you touch Nogueira on the chin, you know, he does have a good chin, but if you hit him, you know, right on the button, you can put him out. And, you know, he has gotten submitted a couple times lately. Granted, it was against the two best Brazilian jiu-jitsu artists in heavyweight history, aside from Nogueira. You know, if you want to rank that that heavyweight Mount Rushmore of Brazilian jiu-jitsu artists, you go Fabricio Werdum, Frank Mir, and Nogueira. So the only guys to submit him are the two guys that are ahead of him on my made-up Mount Rushmore for heavyweight Brazilian jiu-jitsu artists. Now, in terms of this fight, it's just going to be interesting because we don't know what to expect from Stefan Struve. He's gotten knocked out brutally in his last two fights, and he's coming off that heart condition. You know, he fainted in the dressing room before he fought Matt Mitrione. I have no clue where his confidence is at. One thing I can say, though, he's training with the Black Zillions, and Henry Hooft, that's a hell of a coach. You know, he's got great game plans. Look what he's done with Michael Johnson. Look what he's done with Anthony Johnson. You know, sans the DC fight. He's turned these guys into monsters. So if he can, you know, rub a little bit of that off on Struve, maybe he can get the upset, but it's actually not an upset. He's a minus 155 favorite. Maybe he can get the win here in Brazil, but I'm leaning towards Big Nog, man. I think he's got better technique. He's a better fighter. He's more faded, but, you know, I think he's going to slip one of those punches, land a big overhand right, and drop Stefan Struve. So I'm going to go with Big Nog, but like you said, I'm actually not going to bet on this one.
I've given both of these stats out already on this podcast, but a man that is 10 years younger than his opponent wins 60% of the time. A man that has a 6-inch reach advantage wins 60% of the time. Well, Stefan Struve has a 7-inch reach advantage over Nogueira, and he's also 12 years younger than Nogueira. So he's got those stats on his side, but yeah, like I said, passing out before the Matt Mitrione fight, all the stuff that he says, all of his problems, you just can't really bet on him. So yeah, I'll put Nogueira on my UFC pick 'em by decision. I'll just flip a coin when that one happens to see who I'm choosing. The next two fights that we've got on this fight card feature four men from The Ultimate Fighter. I have been unfortunate and haven't been able to watch any of The Ultimate Fighter for this season. So I'm just going to hand it off to you to give us a little bit of insight on these two fights.
All right. One thing I got to say, you know, obviously the fight between Bruno and Franca, it's kind of a pick 'em. I'm leaning towards Franca, but you guys got to look out for this kid, Delano Lopez. He's 19-1. He trains out of Novo Niao with Jose Aldo, Henan Barao, Johnny Eduardo, all those guys. And the guy's a finisher. So look out, Delano Lopez. Like I said, 19-1. You don't just make your UFC debut with a 19-1 record. So I'm looking at Delano Lopez to come in there and win the, you know, the Tough Brazil tournament. So yeah, that's my pick, Delano Lopez. And I'm leaning towards Franca with the other one.
Yeah, definitely lean towards Franca with the other one because he's got a 7-inch reach advantage and he's also 9 years younger than his opponent. But let's move on to the co-main event of the evening. This is really, really taking us back to the Pride days as it's a rematch between Mauricio Shogun Hua and Antonio Ruggiero Little Nog Nogueira. Shogun Hua is 22-10 in his professional career, and Lil Nog is 21-6. Currently, the odds have Mauricio Shogun Hua at minus 192, and Lil Nog, the comeback on him, is plus 177. These guys have fought once before in a pretty great fight, where both guys dropped each other many of times. I feel like now that they're a little bit older, if one guy drops the other, the one that got dropped, he's going to stay down. I really don't want to see either guy lose. It's kind of hard, you know, to watch these legends go at it. But I kind of want to see the Nog brothers win both of their fights respectively and then retire. But I said this the other day on Twitter that I would like for them to both win and then for them to ride off into the sunset. But somebody said that if they do win, they're going to think that, oh yeah, I can make a run at the belt now. If they both win, please don't think that you can make a run at the belt. That ship has sailed, my friends. But I'm actually going to pick Mauricio Shogun Hua in this fight by KO or TKO early on. We saw what Rumble Johnson did to Lil Nog in their fight. And Mauricio Shogun Hua is no Rumble Johnson, but he does have similar KO power. So for that reason, I've got Mauricio Shogun Hua on my UFC pick'em by KO or TKO in the very first round. I'm avoiding the counter move on this one because, like I said, I'm fading all of these old guys. I'm not going to put either any of these guys on my counter move team. I'm probably not going to bet on them unless you say to do that. But what do you got, Daniel?
Well, I actually am going to say to do that. I'm going to take a big risk here. Now, this fight card is in Brazil. Mauricio is a Brazilian. So I'm going to call him Mauricio Shogun because that's what they call him over there. And, you know, when you talk about Mauricio Shogun, this guy's one of the best of all time. Literally. I mean, when he was like 21, 22, he wins that Pride, you know, Grand Prix, he's the champion there. He's knocking everyone out. You know, he knocked out Rampage, Overeem, Arona, all these guys. He had that war with Lil Nog. You know, a lot of people don't know, but Lil Nog and Mauricio Shogun Hua, they actually had a 3-round war in Pride, and it was absolutely incredible. They went toe-to-toe, and, you know, both guys got dropped. And eventually, you know, Shogun kind of edged it out a little bit, and it was a great fight. You know, then Shogun came into the UFC, and if you look at his record, it's hit or miss. But, I mean, the guy's accomplished a lot. He won the belt. He knocked out Machida, knocked out Liddell, knocked out Forrest, you know, knocked out a lot of guys. The James Tahuna knockout was beautiful. Now, here's the thing with Shogun. He's one of these guys that he has to be motivated. He has to be up for a fight in order for him to perform, you know, because he's so damn talented that, you know, sometimes he doesn't really train that hard and he'll just show up and he'll take an ass whooping, but he's so damn tough. It hasn't been until his last two fights that he actually finally started getting knocked out. You know, he had never been knocked out in his entire career until his last two fights. That first fight with Hendo, actually the second fight with Hendo, he was, you know, he was beating him up those first two rounds. You know, I have this theory that when you have a 5-round war, the rematch always ends in the first round. You know, some examples that come to mind are Shogun versus Lyoto, Barao versus Faber, Cowboy Cerrone versus Benson. I have a whole lot of examples that about my theory here. So I played that theory in a Dan Henderson versus Shogun because, you know, the first time they fought was a 5-round war. So then the fight starts, the rematch, and Shogun drops Henderson. So I'm like, yes, the theory is coming to life. And, The ref doesn't stop the fight. I'm like, dude, Hendo's out. Stop the fight. And they wouldn't stop it. And then it got past the first round, and my theory was proven to be incorrect. And Shogun got knocked out in the third round, and it was crazy. But now he's back with Master Rafael Cordero. And if you know about Master Rafael Cordero, this guy worked miracles for fighters. You know, we talk about career turnarounds like Rafael Dos Anjos. This is a guy that started off his UFC career 4-4, and now he's the UFC lightweight champion because of Master Rafa's guidance. And not only RDA, Fabricio Werdum is also a pupil under Master Rafa. And any time, for the most part, that Shogun has trained with Master Rafa, he's not just won, but he's won in devastating fashion. You recall the second Forrest Griffin fight in Brazil. So what Shogun did this time is, you know, he moved to California from Brazil. He brought his family with him, and he's training with Master Rafa again. So for that reason, I think he's going to come out there and knock out Little Nog. Now, obviously, Little Nog, you know, his last fight with Rumble Johnson, he got destroyed. But prior to that, he beat Rashad Evans. I know Rashad Evans was out of shape for that fight, but I don't want to discredit Little Nog. I want to give him the respect he deserves, because the only people to beat Rashad Evans up until that point were John Jones and Lyoto Machida. So for, you know, Rogério Nogueira to get that win on his resume, it has to count for a lot. But he didn't even look great that fight. And then obviously against Rumble, it was the kind of 44 seconds that take out a lot of your life and your career. And, you know, mix that in with the fact that Mauricio Shogun is training with Master Rafa. So I think Shogun's going to come out there and knock him out. So what I'm doing is I got a two-unit parlay, Mauricio Shogun, and something coming up here in the main event.
Yeah, big secret on who the person coming up on the main event is. So let's just talk about that right now. The main event of the evening is between Rowdy Ronda Rousey and Betcha Pitbull Correa. Ronda Rousey is 11-0 in her professional career, and Betcha Correa is also undefeated at 9-0. The odds are staggering. Betcha Correa is the underdog at plus 1200, and Ronda Rousey is currently minus 1500, which is down from earlier today. I saw it at minus 1700. I also said earlier that I was parlaying Neil Magny with somebody later on the card. Obviously, I'm parlaying him with Rowdy Ronda Rousey. The only reason I did that is because I think that Rowdy Ronda Rousey definitely wins this fight. And so it was just giving me better odds on Neil Magny. I got Neil Magny at like plus 150, and putting him with Rowdy Ronda Rousey changed it to like something like plus 170. So obviously there was little breakdown needed for this fight. Ronda Rousey is going to win this fight, I think. You know, mixed martial arts is one of my favorite sports in the world. It is my favorite sport in the world because it is so unpredictable. The fight could end at any moment and anybody could win the fight. It's just, mixed martial arts is fucking incredible in that regard. So maybe Ronda Rousey could get caught by Betcha Correa, but Betcha Correa, she has 9 wins, obviously, and only 2 of those have been by knockout or TKO. And she went to a decision with Jessamyn Duke. Jessamyn Duke is by far away from being an elite fighter. You know, Brendan Schaub says, I think you'd be surprised. No, Jessamyn Duke is not an elite fighter. She does train with the 4 horsewomen, which I think needs to be just stopped right now. The only good thing about the 4 horsewomen is that they sometimes walk out to Metallica, which in my mind is the greatest band of all time. Now, one thing I want to talk about with this main event right here is mixed martial arts is, like I said, the greatest sport in the world, but it's teetering on being sports entertainment. And the entertainment aspect of that is selling fights. And I think that Betcha Correa went a little too far in some of her talking to sell this fight. I'm not going to dive into what exactly she said. Everyone should know that by now. For that reason, I hope that Ronda Rousey beats her. I think she's going to as well. But I also hope that she beats her. Daniel, this is basically we know who's going to win this fight, but what's your breakdown for it?
I'm going to break all my rules that I made for myself with this fight. You know, one of my rules is don't put someone in every single parlay. Go ahead and put Ronda in every single parlay. She's going to win. She's going to kill Betcha. Now, listen, you mentioned that Betcha went to a decision with Jessamyn Duke, right?
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
She didn't just go to a decision with Jessamyn Duke. Jessamyn Duke judo throwed Betcha, okay? Who has the best judo throw in the women's division?
Ronda Rousey.
Exactly. Not only is Ronda Rousey going to throw Betcha on her ass, she's going to take her arm and break it in a 45-degree angle and then take a shovel, dig a grave, and bury Betcha right in there. Betchy has zero chance. You know, everyone listening knows I'm all about the underdogs, right? I don't even recommend putting 20 cents. Actually, the limit's 50 cents. I don't even recommend putting 50 cents on the plus 1200 underdog in Betchy. Now, if Betchy wins, I'm going to look like a total dumbass, but she's not going to win. So, you know, I mentioned that two-unit parlay with Shogun. Now everyone's like, oh, you just put Ronda in there. Maybe. Actually, what I did was I put the under 1.5 rounds in there so we can get some better odds on that, you know, because Ronda straight up is minus 1500. The under 1.5 was minus 335. So I put that in there for 2 units with Mauricio Shogun. I think it's going to win easily. You know, all this stuff about her dragging it out. Yeah, her dragging it out means she's going to win in 40 seconds instead of 15. Because if you think that once she grabs that arm, she's not going to break it, you're 100% mistaken. And here's the thing. You know, you like to think about, Ronda wins by submission prop and this and that. And, you know, there's a good chance that could happen. I think there's a chance she could knock her out too. So that's why I'm staying away from the props. And another interesting prop that I was looking at is, you know, obviously Rousey wins in round 1 is minus 275, but Rousey wins in round 2 is plus 525. So that's very attractive, but I don't think it's getting past the first. I think all this, you know, letting the fight play out talk is talk. That's exactly what it is. And I think Ronda's going to make an example of Betchy very quick. She's going to either break her arm, knock her unconscious, but either way, Betchy is going to get messed up so badly in this fight that go ahead and put Ronda in all your parlays. Let's break my rule for this event, you know?
Yeah, I agree 100%. Let's put Ronda in all of our parlays. I'm pretty sure that she's going to win. One thing that I want to talk about right now is that for some reason, I have privilege enough to listen in to the press conference calls, the conference calls with the fighters, and I got to listen in on the conference call with Ronda and Betcha the other day, and Ronda said that, you know, she's been talking about she's going to draw the fight out. She's going to punish Betcha Kohea. But she also said that if she sees the opportunity to finish the fight, she's going to finish the fight. She promised her mom that if there was a chance to finish it, she's going to do that. So one thing that I've been looking forward to all week to ask you, Daniel Levy, is there is currently the weirdest prop bet I've ever seen, which is Ronda wins within 1 minute. Would you consider playing that?
What's the line on that, Brian? Do you remember?
It's plus 220. With Ronda wins inside of 1 minute is plus 220.
Yeah, you know, don't put more than a unit on it, but why not? I mean, her last couple of fights have been under a minute. And, you know, a lot of people like to talk about, oh, Misha Tate gave her the toughest test. No. Ronda gave Misha Tate the toughest test of her career. You know, that one she decided to drag it out, but I don't think she's going to do that here. And I don't think that Betchy's anywhere near as good as Tate. But that wasn't a matter of Tate being good. That was a matter of, you know, Ronda putting on an Anderson Silva-like performance in her own like, you know, because Anderson doesn't judo throw people. He, you know, he plays with his hands down. Ronda's version of that is throwing you on your ass and breaking your arm. So I just don't see this getting past the first. And as far as the first minute prop, yeah, why not? I'm not going to play it personally because, you know, I understand. Well, you know, what if it ends in the second minute? It's going to really piss me off. So I'm just going to stick with the under 1.5 and parlay that with Shogun. That's already good, set to go. And as far as the other plays are concerned, just follow me. Best fight picks. I'm going to let you know. Don't even worry about it.
So also, Misha Tate, that was her second chance at Ronda Rousey. And Ronda was pretty upset over some of the things that Misha Tate had said in the buildup of the fight, like she's upset about the buildup of this fight as well. But we'll reach the end of the podcast. Daniel, summarize the plays for us.
Yeah, so 2-unit parlay on Mauricio Shogun and the under in the Ronda Rousey fight. And then we're eyeing 1-unit shots on Magny Feijão and Vitor Miranda. It just depends on, you know, I'm going to just do a little bit slightly more investigative work tonight just to finalize these plays and let you know what's going to happen. And I'm also eyeing, I'm going to break another one of my rules and do a very big parlay. You know, maybe Hugo Viana in there, Ronda Rousey. And I'm kind of looking at some people from some other cards. You know, there's a World Series of Fighting card, Marlon Moraes. I like to parlay him. Danny Garcia, the boxer, he's fighting. I'm going to do a crazy parlay that's going to break all my rules, but I really think it's going to cash. So just stay tuned and, you know, go to bestfightpicks.com, type your email in that top right corner, you know, get the best fight picks sent directly to your inbox.
You know what, Daniel? I have yet to do that. Go to bestfightpicks.com, put my own email address in the upper right-hand corner, but I'm going to do that as soon as we close out this podcast right now. I'm going to follow you on all of those plays that you made, of course, because last time I faded Daniel Levy, it did not work out for me. So I'm making my own play, like I said, my first ever play on Flying with Best Fight Picks, but I'm also going to follow you on the rest of those. I'm going to put my email address in the upper right-hand corner of bestfightpicks.com, but right now I want you to reveal your counter move team for us.
It was tough to make a counter move team on this one. So I had to do one little throwaway, but I got Ronda Rousey, Soa the Hulk Pulele, Rafael Feijão, Neil Magny, and here's my throwaway, Leandro Issa.
I went with all people that I wasn't going to try to fade on this fight card. Avoid everyone that you would fade. I've got Soa the Hulk Pulele, Rowdy Ronda Rousey, Gumby, Neil Magny, Warley Alves, and I'm going with Go Paulo, even though you advised me not to do that, maybe Go Paulo has some insight that we don't know. I'm putting Guido Canetti on my counter move team. So that brings us to the end of the episode. We're going to do shout outs as usual. But also, Daniel, you started a new show called Half the Battle. So pump that and also give some shout outs.
Yeah, you know, obviously my show Half the Battle, I do that pretty much every Friday. Every single fight week I do it. And it's a really cool show, you know. I have a different guest on every single week, and, you know, we talk the fights, we break it down, but it's different than this podcast with Brian, because, you know, obviously Brian and I, we stick to the format of breaking down every single fight from start to bottom. On Half the Battle, you know, we talk about more, we talk about controversial issues and stuff like that, and then we also talk about the fight. So it's a lot of fun, different guests every single week, and we just had UFC lightweight James Vick on the show, and I got to sit down with him for about an hour and just really talk to him and, you know, get to know him. It's the first time that, you know, he's really had an in-depth interview. You know, a lot of people were telling me, like, wow, I learned more on that interview that you did with him than I did in the entire season of Tough that he was on. So, you know, I highly encourage, you know, everyone that's listening to this and anyone else to just go and check out, you know, Half the Battle with James Vick. Just go to YouTube, type in Half the Battle, subscribe to Best Fight Picks on YouTube and on SoundCloud to get that, because it's on both formats, you know, whether you like looking at our pretty faces or you just want to hear our voices, you know, you go to SoundCloud for that. So I want to thank James Vick so much for coming on the show, being my first UFC fighter on there. He was such a cool guy. We really had an insightful conversation. You know, we talked about going on drive-bys in Australia with kangaroos. We talked about a lot of crazy stuff like that. I'm not going to go too much into it. Just check it out. And then, so I want to thank James Vick. I want to thank you, Brian. And there's a guy I really want to thank. His name is Ben Diaz. And, you know, he serves in the U.S. military. You know, he's in the army. And, you know, he sent me a message that really touched me. He told me that, you know, it's 7 a.m. in the Middle East. And, you know, the things that really helps him get through his time over there is our podcast. So, you know, that meant a lot to me. You know, I'm a big supporter of our troops and, you know, the sacrifice that they give to just so you and I can have a podcast like this, you know, among other things, just so we can live on this planet and be free. You know, everything that they do for us, we just gotta, you know, take a second to really thank them, because if it wasn't for them, we wouldn't be able to do this right now. So if we can take, you know, give them 1 hour of enjoyment out of their day, that really makes my day. So, Ben Diaz, man, this podcast is dedicated to you and all the U.S. troops.
Dude, Daniel, I'm kind of taken aback by that. I've been interacting with Ben on the Twitter as well, and I was not aware of that. So, yeah, thank you so much, Ben, and thank you so much for taking the time to interact with us on the Twitter. Thank you so much for listening to the podcast. Seriously, I'm just taken aback. I can hardly... I was thinking about what I was going to say. You know, usually this podcast, it is free-flowing. We free-flow it, but it's, you know, it's kind of premeditated, to be honest. But that was not premeditated. So thank you so much, Ben. I want to thank you, Daniel, for bringing this podcast from, you know, a couple of views per week to, we get like 1 million views per week. That's no lie. With 1 million views per week, so many so that I have decided to expand my podcast as well. We do the Flying with Best Fight Picks. The podcast used to be called Flying MMA Opinions and News, but I've since changed it to the Flying Brian Podcast or the Flying Brian Podcast Series, because I'm going to open it up to, like, you and I are going to talk about some rock music here soon. I'm going to talk to some people about some movie reviews and stuff. So look out for more than just mixed martial arts for me, Flying Brian, in the future. I want to thank the number one person that I thank every week on this podcast, Unique Kennels, the official bulldog of MMA. He's been raising affordable and healthy bulldogs for the last 30 years. Please look him up on Twitter at UniqueKennels71 and also on the Instagram, Instagram.com/UniqueKennels. I said it at the beginning of the show. I'm saying it right now. This dude not only supports this show, but he supports other podcasts or other forms of MMA media. He supports local fighters and other MMA promotions. My number one shout out each and every week is to the listeners. Thank you so much for listening. And Daniel, I'm opening up, I'm resurrecting Flying MMA Opinions and News, just like a section of this podcast. And I want to have you as my first guest. I hope that you'll accept that offer. But other than that, yeah, I'll see you next week, man.
I would love to, man. And, you know, thank you so much. It's going to be a lot of fun, buddy.
Namaste.